Do you know the author?
No, I don't, and I don't know the title either. But it's a blue book, and it kind of gives the whole story, you know.
Have you a real love of books and learning?
Just when you thought it was safe to download your most recent episode of Adventures in Library Instruction, Anna's back!
Anna's back!
Hello, everybody! Oh, welcome to episode 17 of Adventures in Library Instruction. I am here with my my lovely, lovely friends, Jason Puckett and Rachel Borchert.
Hi.
Hi.
And we are here to talk anything and everything, not everything, only a couple subjects tonight about library instruction.
I'm Jason, and I work at Georgia State University in Atlanta, and I'm the communication librarian, and I blog at jasonpuckett.net, and I'm on Twitter as LibrarianJason.
I'm Rachel, and I'm the science librarian at American University, and I don't blog because I'm lame, but my Twitter account is Butternut Squash.
And as I said, my name's Anna, and I am in central New Jersey at a public library system. And I do blog at firstconclusions.com, and I am a part-time reference librarian.
And welcome back, Anna.
Thank you.
Where have you been? Fill us in on where you've
been. Oh, you know, there's this crazy thing called life that was happening all around me, and it just kind of took control.
But I've got my for now.
But I've got my priorities back in perspective now. So now my newborn isn't number one anymore. Now it's my podcast. So I'm back on the podcast.
I was starting to get this impression that somehow you felt that a newborn infant in the house was more important than podcasting. But I'm glad to hear that that's not it.
No, I've got my priorities straight now. So yeah, I had set out a few episodes, and I want to thank you guys. Although I listened to everything that happened while I was gone, and I missed some just awesome conversations just about the Oakleaf Van Scoye article with Stephen Francoeur. I thought was fabulous. So, and the zombie discussion with, I think it was Florida State. Were they from Florida State?
Dude, no. You missed that?
I wasn't on that conversation. Yeah, I was so bummed about that.
Oh, Anna.
Yeah, and then Chris Marin. Marin? Is that how you say his last name? I missed that conversation.
Chad.
I missed that conversation as well. So if you haven't listened to them, you should, because there was just some great, great dialogue there and just innovative things that are happening.
Margot Johnson and Missy Clapp are from University of Florida.
Oh, what did I say? Florida State?
You said Florida State,
yeah.
Right. And I want to mention that I emailed Megan Oakleaf and Amy Van Scoye, no relation, to let them know about the episode where we talked about their article, and they agreed with me that they would like to be on a future episode, so maybe we'll have them as guests at some point. So
yay! So and you too, you listeners out there, you could be on our show as well.
So before we actually get started talking about whatever it is we're going to talk about this evening, I want to just very briefly mention, I had a conversation recently with somebody who thought that our awesome theme song was by Beck and wanted to know how we got copyright clearance played on the show, and I wanted to point out that, in fact, our awesome theme song is by the very awesome artist Brad Sucks, who does not suck. I want to thank Brad Sucks for putting out his music on Creative Commons so that we can put it on the show. We do put credits at the end. Whenever it comes up on Shuffle Play on my MP3 player, it always sounds funny to me, this song, because it's called Dropping Out of School, because it doesn't have the old-timey librarian voices in
right.
it. And I sort of miss that, because that's where I hear it, that's the way I hear it most of the time, with the mixed-in librarian voices. So that's all. So I just want props for Brad Sucks in case you don't listen to the end credits where we give our Creative Commons credit.
Jason, do you remember what site you used to find it, or was, did you just happen to know
it
where
is
it was?
From Magnatune.com.
Okay.
If you do a podcast, they have a very nice podcast rights license. All you got to do is give credit, and you can use any of the music from Magnitude in your podcast. Just
excellent.
All you got to say, magnitude.com. Highly recommend them. They have some excellent music, and they have like an unlimited subscription plan where you pay, like, I forget, it's cheap. It's like 10 bucks a month or something, and you can download every piece of music on their site if you want to.
Huh, that's not bad at
yeah.
all.
No, it's really cool. So, anyway, that's it. Just wanted to give props to Brad Sucks.
Well, do you want to? Should we do some quick kind of updates on what's going on? I mean, you guys are probably crazy. Jason and Rachel are both, as they said, at academic libraries, so this is kind of the crazy time.
This is back to school time.
Yeah.
Georgia State just started this week. Started back to class this week. What about you, Rachel?
Yep, same thing. Yeah. We just had our fourth day of class.
And it's just crazy, exploded, full of people after a quiet summer and a break in between classes. But I'm really excited. This is my, I guess I'll start. This is my first start of fall semester as the communication librarian. I've been at Georgia State for 2 years now, but I wasn't communication librarian at the start of fall last year. And so I am getting in on all the orientation activities, and I'm sharing an office over in the communication department, so I can, you know, I'm doing office hours over there, and so I'm getting to, like, meet a lot more people, and I gave orientation tours to the new grad students. I'm really excited about some of the new grads, about all of the new grad students that I'm getting to meet so far, and I'm going to be doing some really cool classes and things like that. So this is going to be, like, hell busy September, but I think it's really going to be a lot of fun, and I'm doing some cool classes, again, that I haven't done before, so I'm really excited about that.
How big is the department, Jason? Do you have any faculty there are?
Oh, geez. I was just at a faculty meeting last week or the week before. I guess it was last week, and it's something like 30 faculty. It's a big department.
That's a big department.
And there are two of us. It's the only department at GSU that has two librarians supporting it.
Uh-huh.
There are, like, the College of Business has three librarians who are supporting it with three librarians. And, you know, some of the schools, the other colleges on campus, have more than one librarian. But communication is the only department that has two librarians. My colleague Netta does the film and theater subjects within the communication department, and I'm everything else. Netta does basically all the arts, whether that's, you know, that's the art department as such, the fine arts department, and music, and film and theater, moving image studies as performing arts. And then I do speech communication, you know, mass comm, and public relations, and, you know, there's all the other communication stuff that gets taught in the department. So basically there are classes that get taught as communication, which is basically graduate classes, and then there's speech and journalism that are the undergrad programs.
Now, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm going to, I think.
But, go ahead.
Do you think, out of that approximately 30 faculty, had all of them seen you before?
No, I know. I'm certain that not all of them had seen me before.
Okay, so bam, there's a check mark. You made, like, new contacts.
Right, yeah. And I've met some new faculty just by virtue of showing up at the start of fall faculty meeting. Now, you know what? I take it back. I think I did go to a faculty meeting last year. Just, I sort of invited myself just to pass out my business cards,
mm-hmm.
and introduce myself when I was, you know, brand new. I guess it was late last fall. But it was really cool because we came in, Netta and I went to this faculty meeting primarily to talk about a bunch of journal cancellations.
God.
And, you know, get just sort of answer questions about, because, you know, budget cuts. We're having to cut $200,000 worth of journals. And so we wanted to go and talk to the faculty and say, look, this is what's happening. We really, really need your input on which titles, you know, we absolutely must not cancel and stuff like that. And they were so, I mean, they asked us some tough questions, but by the end of our time there, I mean, everybody was being really nice, and we got some unsolicited testimonials, because we sort of started talking about other library services in the course of this.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody said, oh, yeah, you've got to get Jason and Netta to come to your class. They're so great. And, you know, so it ended up being a little commercial for our instructional services. And one of the brand new faculty who just started this fall followed us out into the hall to introduce herself to us and say, oh, I've heard so much great stuff about the work you guys do, and you know, just wanted to say, introduce myself and say how much I'm looking forward to meeting you. So, I mean, that was so nice when we had come in to talk about this really crappy, you know,
right.
The fact that we're canceling all these journals. So it was great. So that's all. Rachel, what's going on?
Nothing like that. So, let's see. I guess I've actually been working on leading project, which has nothing to do with instruction, but the cool thing is I'm going to talk about it anyway.
Well, we do other stuff besides instruction, so.
Yeah. So I ended up hosting a party for the faculty to come and, like, look at their weeded selections.
Oh, I saw you tweeting that. That's right.
Yeah. And I invited about 25, and 6 showed up. And then the next day, I sent a call to say, I'm sorry, I had a 24-hour flu, I couldn't come. But I'm now, like, looking through all the books, and sure enough, they wrote on a bunch of them. On the pieces of paper that I put on the book. I didn't write on the book. There was one that 3 of them all said, yes, keep this book. So I guess that's what I'm consumed with right now, but it's also beginning of the semester, and, like, all the instruction requests are pouring in. So I think I've talked about college writing before, how, like, for us, each librarian gets paired with our basic level English class, you know, that freshman takes. Mm-hmm. And so I have 4 different instructors, and they're teaching 10 different sections of college writing, which is, you know, it's doable. And all last year we had this committee to talk about how we can kind of strengthen the relationship between the teachers and the librarians. So that we had, you know, we're all giving these great instruction sessions that were really active and dynamic, and, like, that they're getting all the teaching that they need, and just kind of how we can make that better. So last week, all of the college writing teachers got together for a full day thing, and the librarians came for a couple hours to meet our partners, and then we all broke up into small groups, and for each there was an assignment, like one of the college writing assignments that one of the faculty in the group would assign. And then we were supposed to talk about how a library instruction or session or sessions should be designed to teach to that assignment. So it really got all of the faculty thinking about, like, you know, outside of the box kinds of ways to teach. And the next day I got an email from one of my 4 people. And I've taught with her, this will be my 3rd semester teaching with her. And it's usually, you know, we've always done a one shot where I lecture for half the time and then the other half the time they do work on their own. And she said, because of that workshop, she's all invigorated about this. And she's actually scheduled 4 different class days.
Wow.
Yeah. So, well, the first one is just like 15 minutes at most. Like, I'm going to go in, kind of say hi so they can put a face to the name. I'm in the syllabus this semester for the first time. But yeah, we're going to do like kind of a stepwise thing of the first time will be very, very basic intro to library stuff. Second one will be more what is scholarly, what's popular, what are databases, and the third one will be a more intensive, like how to search, you know, and how to get really focused results kind of thing. So I'm really excited about that. But at the other end of the spectrum is I'm starting to run out of time to have all these, you know, 10 sections. And if all of the other 3 people start requesting multiple days, it's going to get really slammed. So,
I was going to say, that's the tension with that, is that, because that's actually, I think, the more ideal teaching situation where you're kind of going in those, like, at the point of need. I mean, it makes sense when you're in there. But then there's a limited human resource on the library side to, I mean, like you said, if the other 2 or 3 sections want to do this, then, I mean, it eats up time. It eats up a lot of time, especially with prep and everything. So that's a definite tension I've just heard, because you should celebrate that you're getting in there for those 4 separate ones, but then you're like, oh my God, what if all other faculty want me to come in, you know, 4 times a semester?
It seems to be like the big pattern with instruction in libraries is like phase 1 is like, please, please let us into your classroom, you know, and you're like just working on developing. And then once that reaches a critical mass, then you have to take a step back and say, okay,
now what?
How are we going to be strategic about how these sessions work, you know, so that we're hitting the students at the right times and that we're using our time most effectively.
Right.
I've been talking to my boss about this a little bit over the summer because I looked at the fall schedule and there are these freshman speech classes that I don't know if they're required for everybody. I think it might be like you can take either this or another thing, but it's something that it's a non-majors class and there's two different courses and there are something like between 25 and 30 sections of it. I think there are about 30 sections of it this semester, and the research that they're doing is a lot like the freshman English classes where it's just, you know, find a book, find an article, and do a speech instead of writing a paper. But there's so many sections of this that I literally just cannot possibly do a session for all of them. And I was talking to my boss about this, and I was like, you know, these are not communication majors. They're getting the same kind of session in their English classes, and when I come in to talk to them, half the time they're bored because they've just had the same session in an English class. And what do I do about this? And he said, well, you know, you can say no to these sections if you feel like they're getting the same instruction in another class. You can support this with tutorials. You can support it with research guides. So I wrote an email to all, you know, 20 or so graduate instructors, mostly graduate instructors that are teaching these classes, and I was as nice as possible about it, and I said, well, these are the things that I can do for your class, but the bad news is there are just too many sections, and I can't do 30 class sessions. Literally, there's not enough time. And I was really terrified about sending out this email, because it's sort of contrary to everything else that we do, you know, which is, please let us come talk to your class. But you know, I heard back from a few instructors, and they were like, oh, this is so great that you're offering all these things.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so I guess I put a good spin on it.
And if you can, and the thing is, Jason, is that you have the technological knowledge and skills to put something together online for them that they could, that would be helpful. I mean, obviously, yeah, the face-to-face, I think, is our first choice, but I don't know. I think it's awesome that you provided alternatives to them, and they obviously are happy about that, so that's good.
Yeah, I guess so. And, you know, I'm going to work with, if they've got some kind of unusual research assignment that's more detailed than what I think they're all teaching, then I'll come in and do a session. And I had one person ask me for a session in early October, and I was like, oh, well, yeah, I can do that. I'll be done with most of the other classes by that point. That's fine. I'll come in and do it. So.
And I'd love to know what other schools are doing with that, because it sounds like there's an overlap there, because you're saying that there's this in the core curriculum that first year, I don't know if it's their first year or not, I guess.
Yeah, basically.
They're taking that English class, and they're also taking this speech class, where you say there's a lot of probably duplicate library.
There's a lot of overlap.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is. So, I don't know, but I do know that it's something that I've been encountering in the last semester or two, is I go in, and one time we have some of these freshman learning communities where they're taking all of their first year of classes together, and I literally went into the speech class, and it was the same group of students that I had just taught, like, a week or two prior. I had just taught an English class for them, and it was the same students,
but
a different instructor. And I was like, oh, okay, so what do I do with this now? All right.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, so you guys remember how to do all this, right? Let's find out how much you remember. So I sort of tried approaching it that way. So, yeah, so I don't want to do that again. So, Anna, how much are you affected by back to school?
It's different. I think my job is weird. It's, the summertime is crazy in the public library, but it's not adult programming crazy. It's grade school students, younger, middle school, high school, just like summer reading program stuff. I mean, the library really becomes alive in the summertime. I love the energy. It reminds me of those first couple of weeks when everyone comes back to campus, like at a college or a university. So now it actually picks up where the summer program slows down, obviously, because summer's over. It actually picks up for me because I can start doing adult programming again.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is nice because it times well, because I was out on maternity leave, and now I'm trying to kind of get back in there and do some workshops and classes. But it's also nice because we do get some of the college students that will come over and study. There's like three universities and one community college in the area. And sometimes we get some bleed over. They'll come over and study. And I always love seeing them and I want to hug them, but I refrain.
Some of them probably wouldn't mind.
So it's different. It's definitely different. We don't have that nervous energy that I think you get the first couple of weeks with the academic library, which yeah, I always loved. I loved finals time working in academia, and I loved the first couple of weeks of school.
Well, it's like an explosion. I mean, I know in 3 weeks or so it will have settled into a steady hum, but it's really like an explosion right now.
The other thing that affects me, this is welcome to the public library world, is I talked about this probably about 6 months ago, but partnering with the senior center in town, and they all leave during the summer. They all go.
Oh, okay.
And they're back now. So we're actually talking about partnerships and what we're going to do. I'm going to come over and kind of do some train the trainers kind of thing, talk to the people who are doing instruction over there, and maybe do a couple, you know, demonstration workshops for their community that comes in and does their, they have like this thing they do once a month. It's almost like a tea and tech kind of thing, you know, where they have snacks and someone gets up and talks about Inkscape or Facebook or, you know, whatever tech flavor of the month. So I think I'm going to do a couple of those also. So that's picking up too.
So you timed the birth of your child so that it would be in the lull in programming.
Yes. Right? Yeah. That's exactly what I did.
Well done. Well
exactly.
Done. So do you ever do like technology petting zoos kind of thing? I know hardware is harder to produce for these programs than
well, what is my new, and I'm very excited about this, my new toys is I now have four laptops that I can check out to people. So when they come to the workshops or whatever, they can actually have a laptop to work on. Because when I was doing my workshops, I don't know if you remember, we don't have a computer lab.
Right.
And so I would open it up, you know what, bring your computer if you want and just log into the wireless. Because I'm not really doing a lot of, I guess I do some library resources, but I really do more of like the web 2.0, more the transliteracy kind of skills things. Mm-hmm. And my branch manager, who is just, I'm going to say it, Freakin' Monkey Awesome, said, you know what, let's put in the budget, so let's see if we can get four, you know, vanilla laptops. And we got them, and I've asked everything I wanted to download. I just went crazy with things I wanted to get downloaded onto all four of them. And so I think I will be able to do something like that if I understand what the little petting zoo thing is, where people can actually come in and play with these things.
Right, yeah, that's exactly what I meant.
So I am very, very, because people would come in and I'd have some people on computers and some people not, and, you know, and you could team them up, but I'm very excited to have that option for them. Here's a laptop. You can work on it, and then you can go home. And hopefully it'll stick a little bit more than when they go home onto their home computer, and they'll feel more comfortable with what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, hands-on makes all the difference with tech stuff. It really does. I'm doing some my usual slate of Zotero workshops, and I think I'm going to get a really big turnout. I've got two slated for September, and I think I'm going to get a really big turnout because people have been plugging them to their departments, and I'm already getting questions just from the other subject librarians who have told their departments about Zotero, and I'm already getting questions because they have told their departments about Zotero. So I have a new toy, speaking of your new laptops. I mentioned the freshman learning communities at GSU. They have given a few select freshman learning communities iPads and flip cameras, and they have given the instructors iPads, and they have given some of us subject librarians iPads, so I have an iPad for the school year.
Shut up!
Yeah.
Oh my god, I hate you.
I know.
I wouldn't have...
200,000 windfall budget cuts my ass.
You know what, this is not coming from the library, though. It's coming from the university IT department is like a co-sponsor of this iPad program. So I guess they're paying for it. I mean, I guess there's tech money, apparently. we have to give them back. I'm going to have to give it back, like, either at the end of the semester or the end of the school year. I'm not sure which. And I wouldn't have bought one for myself, but I like it since it didn't cost me anything. I'm really enjoying it, using it as an e-reader. And we're basically just supposed to sort of play and see what kind of instructional and outreach applications we can come up with for it. So
that's an area I feel like I am completely falling behind in. It's all the mobile apps, like with the iPads or your Droid or your La La La, you know, whatever. I don't have a handheld device.
And but I don't either.
You have an iPad.
Well, yeah, okay, I do now, but
cry me a river.
I mean, I don't have, I don't have the 3G on it. It's not, you know, it's Wi-Fi.
Gotcha.
Basically. But, you know, I use it at home, and I'm actually not using it at work very much because the Wi-Fi is kind of crappy in my office. But I'm using it on the train to read, but I can't do, like, mobile browsing with it when I'm away from a Wi-Fi hotspot.
But it sounds like, it seems like I've seen, like, on blogs and Twitter and just kind of on the interwebs or whatever, is that people are, that's what schools are doing. They're kind of throwing out some iPads to a select, like, to a focused, you know, demographic group or whatever. You know, like you said, it was going to a couple freshman learning communities.
Right.
Why those were chosen, I don't know. But just to play with it and see, what can you do with this? What can you do in your classroom? What can you do in your education experience to share with this?
Right, right. And so I'm trying to answer that question in a cool and exciting way, so they'll let me keep it for a while longer. I don't like, okay, I'm not, you know what, I'm not going to go off on an operating system thing, but I'm not crazy about the Apple OS. I think it's way too locked down, and I can't do some of the stuff that I would otherwise like to do with it. But I really like the form of it. It's a nice size. It's a cool thing for, you know, it's not so heavy, and you can just slip in a bag, and it's way lighter and smaller than a laptop is, and a lot more portable. And so I really like the form of it, and I think I'm going to be looking at Android ones in the future, possibly, or some other, maybe even a Windows tablet. But I really like the tablet PC, and I'm thinking about ways to use it, like in presenting, or I don't know what exactly yet.
Are you matched up with the freshman learning communities that have it as well, or
yes,
no? Oh, you are. Okay,
we are, because there are the freshman learning communities all have a theme, and so like as communication librarian, they've matched me with a communication themed community,
right.
And it's like communication and mass communication and pop culture, or something like that. I forget exactly how they phrased it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I'm very excited, and I really love working in a place that sort of is willing to just do some of these kind of crazy experiments and see what happens. We've got a real culture like that at GSU, and I really like that about it. So. That's all. Man, I won't shut up tonight. Sorry.
What are you talking about? I guess, you know, what I don't know, maybe our listeners haven't really picked up on it, but a lot of things that we've kind of been talking about have to deal with partnerships. Kind of, this is the time, even now in my job, where you kind of scramble to kind of look for those ends for partnering with either faculty or a community group or a class, you know, something, a group, even an organization on campus. I know that there seemed to be there was a trend there for a while that people were trying to hook up with, like, student groups. Do y'all remember? That's probably, like, 10 years ago. They're like, let's get into the Greek system, and we'll go in and do information literacy programs with the Greek system. And I'm like, what?
So, no. You don't remember that?
Oh, my gosh. It seems like it was everywhere.
I was not a librarian 10 years ago.
Well, I wasn't a librarian 10 years ago either. I was working in libraries, but I wasn't, you know. So.
I guess I wasn't either. I was working in libraries.
I was in college. I guess I was working in library.
Rachel wasn't even born.
I have more and more of these conversations the older I get. I don't know what's going on, but yeah. So I do have a really terrific sort of evolving partnership story that I can share, teaching partnership. I've talked before on the show about this history of journalism class that I've been working with for a couple of semesters now, and it's a terrific class. It's really research intensive. And I've gone from doing like me doing one session with this class and then doing lots and lots and lots of individual consultations. That was sort of how it started off. So they're using primary sources, and so they really need a lot of library help. Then the summer section of the class was the second time I taught it, and I partnered with our new history librarian, who has a PhD in history and has taught college history and is really great with the primary resources, the historical stuff. And so I said, her name's Jill Anderson. I said, Jill, would you be willing to co-teach this class with me, because I could really use your expertise as a historian? And she was like, yeah, great, I'd love to. So she and I did the class together, and I said, listen, we've been doing so many consultations, let's try something new. And so we did research labs that I think maybe I've talked about before, where we just scheduled time in a classroom and students would show up with their questions, and we'd go on from there. So then after the summer session was over, this fall there are two sections of this class being taught, two professors, and they asked us to lunch. They asked me and Jill to lunch, and they said, can we talk about a game plan for the fall for this class? There's going to be two sections of it, 50 students doing primary source research with really no history experience, so they're going to need a lot of help. So they asked us to come in. We're doing a meet and greet one day in the class before the instruction session. We're going to come in and introduce ourselves. We're doing the actual class session for two classes. We're doing the research labs again, and the professor asked us, can you do it on these days at this time, because this is where it'll fall in the assignment and this is where it'll work out better. And we talked about what kinds of questions they were coming to us with that we felt like they should really be going to the professor with, like, is this a good topic and how do I write my conclusion and stuff like that. And so he talked about how he was going to adjust maybe the way he interacted with the students to kind of help field some of that stuff. And so it's really turned into kind of an elaborate collaboration between the two professors, the two librarians, and we've got really kind of a semester-long game plan for this thing, and it's really cool and really exciting. We've got all these different kinds of expertise working on the class just because we know sort of how to approach it now, and I'm just really blown away and excited with how it's going to go this semester. Jill and I have decided we're going to either write about it or present about it or something, just the way this collaboration has evolved from kind of ad hoc and let's see what works to kind of, strategizing for the fall. So it's really awesome.
I think that's how so many of them start, though. I mean, it's just, even if it's just happen chance, I mean, not even a plan. Like, this is someone who I want to collaborate with and partner with, not in those formal terms. But I think that's where it normally starts, is with that one little one shot, and then it becomes something more like that. I mean, I think Rachel was talking about that as well. There wasn't that how the one you were talking about, where it started out as you went in for one session and now you're going in four times during the year at more strategic times?
Yeah, so I that had some outside influence in that, the workshop was what really opened her eyes instead of like me being the mind-blowing instructor, though of course I'm sure I was. I just don't think she had ever really thought outside the box, as to how she could really like structure all of her assignments to kind of be integrated with an increasing complexity of information literacy. So it got her, thinking, and then I'm more involved as a result. But yeah, I mean, it started with the one shot.
And I can't remember if she knew or not.
No.
Because I think, Jason, you said one of yours was a new faculty.
Not for this collaboration. It's actually one guy who is... I don't know if he's an instructor or an assistant professor, but he's working on his PhD in history and teaching in the comm department, and one very senior faculty who has been there since I was an undergraduate, and he was the one who... I had a class with him as an undergrad, as a matter of fact, and he's the one who created this class, basically.
Okay.
So, yeah, we've got a real variety, and Jill is a brand new librarian. She's very experienced with historical research, but she's brand new to librarianship, and... so it's a real sort of exciting mix of the four of us. Really cool. Yeah.
I think there is something to be said for actually new blood, because it seems to, that they don't have a set game plan, either librarians or professors, either one, when they're new. because I know when I first got to Emory, there was one faculty who actually emailed me before my first day on campus, wanting to meet with me and talk with me about instruction. And he was my greatest ally.
Was that the biology guy?
Yeah. He brought me into every class. He worked me into the syllabus. We would write assignments together. It was really awesome. We got to do a lot of experimenting of, you know, let's just see how this works. And maybe we'll try a pretest here or throw in some questions on the next quiz after I come in and see if they're learning. And, you know, he was totally open to any of those things. But he had actually been there for a few years. And it was my arrival that got him all excited.
Oh, there you go.
Interesting, yeah.
I was thinking the flip side, you know, the new faculty coming in.
Yeah. But, well, in that case, I think they just weren't aware that there was a biology librarian. And, you know, like, everyone had kind of settled into their roles.
Mm-hmm.
So I think sometimes it takes that new person being like, hello, I'm here. And, like, just making those introductions and kind of getting people thinking about the library. So I didn't do any of that. He did.
Yeah, it's really exciting being at GSU right now. We've hired, like, it feels like half a dozen new librarians in the last
year. Are you kidding
me?
There's a pilgrimage going on to GSU. Every time I turn my head, someone's going to GSU.
Seriously, and some of them are new librarians, and some of them are awesome, very experienced librarians who are just new to GSU. But we've hired a lot of new people in the very recent past, and it's really cool. We've got some terrific people coming in.
Well, it's a good opportunity for you guys to start, you know, looking at those departments. And I think as long as the librarian's comfortable, like, making those, you know, being open to whatever faculty want to do instruction-wise.
Right, yeah.
It's a great opportunity to rethink.
And that kind of goes with the veteran librarians also. I think I just remember in jobs, they, you know, we'd get our list of the new faculty coming in, and you could just hear the groans in the department, like, oh, I've got to go meet with the new faculty, you know. And it was just, I think, because, I mean, they were excited to talk to them about their research, but I think not everyone gets excited about instruction. So it would be, I just remember our team leader being, in one case specifically, our team leader being a huge advocate for going and meeting with your new faculty. Mm-hmm. Because, and one of the examples I'm going to use is kind of Jason's, where he's like, okay, I've got 50 sections of this. I can't get to all of you. But the new faculty members may not really realize everything that you could do for them. I think I have found one of the biggest things that shocks new faculty is when I tell them, I will sit down and go through an assignment with you. And, you know, what we can hammer out an assignment together. You know, we can figure out some type of assignment. Because, you know, the resources that the library has, I mean, they're new. I mean, yes, they have their PhD in the area, obviously, and everything. But I just think you give that kind of cultural perspective. You know the students, you know the library, you know the resources. And that's who would always take me up on assignment design, would be the new faculty members. That and DA, teaching assistants, graduate teaching assistants. They were always more than willing to basically banging down my door to help with assignment design.
You know, that's something I haven't done is offer to meet with the new faculty. At least, I think they're, if I remember right, we've got four new faculty in my department. Two of them are in my area, and two of them are in moving image studies. And I need to, I've met my new folks, but I haven't just offered to sit down with them and talk about it. It's too late to talk about assignment design, I guess, since classes have already started, but I need to just email them and offer to drop by and sit down with them at some point.
I want to go back to college. You have a moving images faculty member?
Well,
someone who studies moving images?
That's film and TV.
I know, but I want to do that.
They call it MIS, Moving Image Studies.
I was a business major. We didn't do anything fun like that.
From GSU, they've got it in the communication department.
Can I give another tip? Sorry.
Please.
Something that I started doing my second year that I was at Emory, so I wasn't new, but, you know, by that time you have kind of a sense of who in your department likes giving instruction and who doesn't. You know, like, you've kind of established partnerships. I'm sure most of the people here have, you know, their set partnerships, and then there's just kind of the people that you never reach. So what I did is, instead of just being like, hey, I'm here for instruction or waiting for them, I would look at their, not their syllabi, the course description, And I would try and craft, like, sample, not assignments necessarily, but instruction sessions that I thought would pair really
Ooh,
well.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, and, you know, trying to focus on things that are really more outside the box.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, there was one that was, like, neuroscience and the media. And I was like, hey, you know, this would be a really great time to talk about evaluating sources, and I've done this thing with other people in the in the past where we played this Family Feud game, and then we, you know, we talked about how to read science articles and all this stuff, and a couple of them took me up on it, and I feel like that's probably what's missing is when they think of library instruction, everyone seems to think of the really boring lectures that everyone's checking their Facebook and, like, you know, that it's just not a very dynamic process, and I think just showing them some of the other things that we can do. And instead of just saying, oh, we can do assignments, but being like, here, this is what I would do for your class. You know, like, please, let's talk about this. Seems to be kind of more attention grabbing.
Right, and to pull them away from, I can show them how to use the catalog. You know, I can show them how to use... Right. Cue the peanuts adult. Right. Whatever.
And, you know, I mean, at some point, you can't get away from that entirely.
Oh, right.
You know, they have to learn the catalog. There's things that they can't discover on their own that you just have to say, you click on this, you type this in, you know. That's going to happen. But I think that, yeah, showing them what else. And the fact that we're actually instructors, I think maybe they forget about, you know, that we can design, like, active learning activities,
mm-hmm.
break them up into small groups, make them do an in-class assignment, that kind of thing, can open their minds possibly.
Rachel, I forget, are you still working mostly with undergrads or grad students as well?
Almost all undergrads.
Because I'm finding that in my newish role that I'm working a lot more with grad students and upper division students, mm-hmm. and I'm struggling a little bit with, geez, do I even know how to teach them? What do I show them? What do they need to know? And I'm going to really do some hard thinking about that this semester because I'm working with a lot of senior classes and some graduate classes. I got invited to talk to a doctoral seminar next week about Zotero. I'm doing some really different classes this semester. So it's kind of exciting and it's kind of scary because I'm thinking, well, I can't show these people here's how to search the catalog. I've really got to be creative and give it a little more thought and, you know, think about what is it they're really going to need as researchers. So, I mean, it's exciting, but I feel like I've been kind of getting in a rut with my instruction, and this fall is going to kind of forcibly break me out of that. So I've got to scramble a little bit and figure out how to teach some of these groups.
Well, the nice thing about graduate students is that they have a lot more active desire to hear mm-hmm. what you're saying than the undergrads.
Right.
You don't have to grab their attention. You don't have to make them stand up every 10 minutes to keep them awake.
And I've found that I can sort of trust them a little more to be a part of the discussion.
Right.
That's exactly what you're saying. I can sort of come in and say, what questions do you have? What do you guys want to see or know about, you know, the research process?
And I think at that point also they're ready to go to the more advanced, I don't know, research tools that are out there. I mean...
Yeah, that's exactly the time to be showing, like, here's this data set that we have.
Right.
That we pay $3,000 a year for. You guys are the ones that need to use this, and it's a little tricky to navigate, so let me show you how to do it. But they're the ones that are going to get really jazzed about that, because that stuff you can't find on Google, you can't find in the catalog. You just have to know it's there.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I've got professors that are specifically, like, asking me to show them how to find demographic data and stuff like that. I'm like, okay, so I've got 2 weeks to learn how to find this demographic data before I have to go teach it to somebody else.
But that's also, I think, because they're going to, you know the tools that are there. Even if you don't know how to use them as savvy as you would want to, you know what they contain. You know what you can do with it.
Right.
And the example I think of is, when I worked at University of Georgia, there was a woman there who worked with advertising. She did, like, journalism and advertising. And there was this one database that all of us librarians hated to use. It was the Simmons Study of Media and Markets. And this database is so awesome because it goes through and it shows you what demographics are eating what or what demographics are using what. Or, so, you know, it lets you focus in on your marketing niche that you want. And we all hated it, but she knew how to use it. Like, she could launch missiles with this thing. I mean, it was just amazing what she could do. And she would get graduate students just drooling at the mouth. You know, I mean, and she had them hooked. She had them hooked. They're like, you had us at Simmons. I mean, it was just because they could help. And I think that her knowledge of that tool, that was her in. That was her total in with faculty and with graduate students. And it just kind of blossomed from there.
You know, we have, this is kind of an aside, but we have Simmons and it's on one computer on campus.
Exactly. It usually is.
for anyone at any library who has Simmons, like, it is worth the time to learn that tool because it is awesome.
Isn't it amazing?
Our business librarian, his sample search is the most popular beer by different religions. It's amazing. Wow. Like, what do Mormons drink? And it actually comes up. Apparently, some Mormons do have a preference when it comes to beer.
I've never used this, but I need to because some of my comm classes overlap. You know, like public relations has some overlap into marketing and advertising.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
There's some overlap there. And so these are some of the, like the mass communication classes are the ones who are needing some of these data sets that I've just really, you know, I've never used before because I've been teaching freshman English for the last 8 years before this, so, you know.
Well, that's like when I was doing anthropology at University of Georgia. And mind you, I was a business major, okay? Not anthropology, business major. And that was just basically sitting down figuring out the stupid thing. I mean, this crazy database of information that's been put together with certain culture names and certain group names. And, oh, my God, it's just insane. But once I figured it out, again, I knew my graduate students were going to just think I was the bee's knees coming in and talking about it and showing them how to use it. And I remember their eyes would be like, oh, that's what you do with it. I'm like, yeah, this is what you do. It's not that hard. It's just cryptic.
Right. You know, we could really benefit. I mean, subject librarians especially, we get into these mm-hmm. niches, and we could really benefit from a lot more kind of cross-training, but it's so hard to find the time. We had today two of our two science librarians, rather, put on a session about science research tools. And in the space of an hour, I learned about all of these things that I had never even heard of before, all of these research tools that we have. Some of it I didn't understand because it was like science and it was hard, but you know, I understood about like searching for animals and stuff like that, but I didn't understand some of the chemistry stuff, but I could probably do it again with instructions now, so.
But see, that goes back to the whole, and I loved my job at Emory because I didn't have a subject per se. I had an idea, I guess. And so then I worked with all the different subject librarians, and it was so much fun. It was so much fun because they had that subject knowledge, and I would bring in the teaching methods that we could to do in each of the sessions, and I learned from them, and I don't know if they learned from me or not. I don't know if they would do half the stuff I did, but it was a great combination, a great team effort.
We kind of have somebody in that role. We have relatively new, I guess it was a new position, undergrad services librarian, which is a lot of what I think, you know, I think she does a lot of the same stuff that you did at Emory.
Mm-hmm.
She does a lot of instruction for the first year English classes, and she puts up lib guides. All of the first year students are reading reading the same book. They're reading Outcast United, or they've been told to read the same book. I don't know whether they really are. So anyway, yeah, we've kind of got somebody in that role, too. So before we run out of time, because I know we're coming up on the end, I have a piece of news that I want to announce that I'm very excited about. If you read my blog or follow me on Twitter, you already know this, but I have a book deal with ACRL, and I'm going to be writing a guide to Zotero, which I'm very excited about. So it's going to be like part how-to guide, but also a lot of instructional stuff in there as well. And I'm talking to professors who are using it in their teaching, and it's going to be kind of a guide to not only using it, but like how to support it in a library environment and what are the best ways to teach workshops about it and how you can use it in a credit course and that kind of thing. So I'm really excited about it, and I bring it up because I would really love to hear from people who are teaching Zotero in your libraries, or especially if you're collaborating with faculty. I would really love to hear from you some of the stuff that you're doing with it. So leave a comment on the blog, or tweet at me, or email me, or whatever. So, and I'll be talking about it again. No fear about that.
Jason, I always think of you as being Zotero, and now you really are. I mean, you're going to be the guy that writes the book.
Well, I'm writing the first Zotero book. I'm a little intimidated because Dan Cohen, who's the director of the Zotero project at Center for History and New Media, has told me on Twitter that he wants to pre-order 3 copies. And I'm like, okay, I guess I better do a good job then. All of a sudden, this is real, and I have to write it. People are going to read it. So,
have you heard from other people that are going to give examples and stuff of what they've been doing?
Yes, absolutely. Good. I've talked to a professor, a poli-sci professor at Georgia State who's using it. I've been talking to some folks at Emory. There's a really cool collaboration going on called the New Orleans Research Collective that's using Zotero, and it's sort of this cross I'll talk about it on a future show maybe, but it's this collaboration that's taking place across universities, across states, with graduate students and faculty and undergraduates all contributing to this research project by way of using the Zotero Groups feature. So I'm talking to some of the people who are involved in that, and it looks like I may be getting a little bit involved in it myself, I hope. I've got a professor at UNO that I'm emailing with, and several people that I haven't contacted yet that are on my list that I'm sort of working up to contact. I want to make sure that I've got some intelligent questions to ask people and stuff like that. So anyway, so I would love to do like maybe a future episode talking about Zotero, maybe when I'm further along in the book and I've thought a little more about the teaching applications and stuff. So
yeah,
maybe I'll have some better ideas about what we can do with it. But anyway, so yeah, if you read my blog, it's been like all Zotero for several months because I've been working on, up to this. So
well, that is good news, and I think they found the perfect person to write the book.
Oh, well, thank you very much. You can count on hearing more about it as it progresses. So I'm about like maybe 15% of the way through a first draft. It's going to be 7 chapters, and I'm about 2/3 of the way through chapter 2.
So, oh my God, it makes my stomach hurt thinking of writing a book.
I know. I can only look at 1 chapter at a time.
Yeah.
We're expecting it to be out in the spring sometime. Cool. Spring of 2000.
Very cool.
So, that's all. I just wanted to get that in before we ran out of time.
Yeah, I just want to tell everyone out there to have a good beginning of the semester. It's time to bear down.
Back to school, everybody. Yeah, I'm going to Dragon Con for a few days and then coming back.
Oh my God.
I think I'm teaching about 15 classes in September. So.
I am going to Ireland. Maha!
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Did you just say you're going to Ireland?
She did.
Yeah. A week from tomorrow.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's May. I don't know why I chose the beginning of the semester, but yeah. It's making scheduling fun.
Awesome.
Have fun.
Yeah. Thank you. I'll tell you all about it.
Okay, this has been episode 17 of Adventures in Library Instruction. It is still just barely August 2010. Have a great back to school, everybody. See you next month. Bye. Adventures in Library Instruction is produced by Rachel Borcher, Jason Puckett, and Anna Van Skoik. It's released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License. To subscribe, go to our website at adlibinstruction.blogspot.com. Leave comments and suggestions on the blog or email us at adlibinstruction@gmail.com. Our opening theme song is Dropping Out of School by Brad Sucks, and our closing theme is Higher Education by the Napoleon Bonapartes. Both are available at magnatune.com.
Contact the library schools and the American Library Association. They are able to give you valuable advice.